breaking ball and a call. Strike three. Third strikeout for Zach.
He's going to just watch it go. A grand slam for Bryson Stott.
And there's a high fly ball. Deep right field. Harper watches it fly.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, the Phillies are playing their best baseball of the season right now, I think. I know they were pretty hot in May for a little while there, but after a weekend series sweep of the Rangers in their own personal house of horrors over the years, and as we record here on Monday night, the Phillies wrapping up a really nice come-from-behind 4-1 win over the Reds in Cincinnati in the first of a three-game set in Ohio. The Phillies, 20 games over 500 for the first time this year, and now with a six-game lead over the New York Mets in the National League East. Helping me break it all down on this edition of the Roundtable is Liz Rocher. You, of course, know her as the editor of the Baseball Research Journal for Sabre, and you follow her on X and Blue Sky at Liz Rocher. Liz, Phillies playing some of their best baseball of the season. It is a good time right now.
They are vibing good. They are fun to watch, even if they don't score till the very end of the game. They're still winning, and that's, in the end, all I really care about.
Yeah, it was a little bit nip and tuck for most of the night on Monday night. The Reds had a 1-0 lead with two outs in the eighth inning with nobody on base. It just didn't look like the Phillies had much life to them, but they did manage to pull it out with four runs in the top of the eighth inning and two outs to get it done. Justin Clue not joining us here on the podcast tonight. We will talk to him a little bit later on in the week, but let's dive right in the headlines with this team right now, Liz. And of course, as I mentioned, Phillies win 4-1 on Monday night. 69-49 on the season, a season high 20 nice. Games over 500. And on June 12th, Liz, the Mets had a 5.5 game lead on the Phillies in the National League East. That lead is now 6 for the Phillies. We've seen an 11.5 game swing in the standings in the National League East over that time. Now, that's 2 months. It's a long time. A lot can happen in a baseball season in 2 months, but we've watched the Mets absolutely slide down the drain, and the Phillies are playing really solid baseball right now. They're not perfect. They're not doing everything right. Every game's not a party, but they are finding ways to win. And what I like lately, Liz, a lot of these come-from-behind wins we haven't seen much of this year, really showing a lot of fight.
That's what's really encouraging to me, is that I looked at the 1-0 score tonight and at, you know, another such score, 2-0 score in Texas.
Right.
And my assumption was that, all right, I guess this is just how it's going to end, because I've been trained from the beginning of the season to think this. Yeah. But they've been pulling it out late. They haven't been giving up. They haven't been folding. Is it nice to see that they've fought, like, all nine innings? You know, all nine innings, that's the personality of these Phillies. That's what it should be. And yeah. I'm glad to see that, you know, it took them a few months, but they're finally settling into it.
Yeah, they seem to be. And listen, the pitching's been great from top to bottom here over the last few weeks. The starting rotation has continued to be good. I'm going to talk about Taijuan Walker here in just a second, because he's been a miracle worker this season here, and especially of late. But, I think anytime you have a 1-0 lead, you're down 1-0, pardon me, but a team has a 1-0 lead. The Reds got that run early in the game, but they just were never able to tack on. That was because of Taijuan Walker. But like you mentioned, in the Texas series, and we've seen it a few other times, the Phillies had tight leads throughout the game on Sunday in Texas as well. The bullpen is doing the job. What we've seen from the Phillies earlier in the year was they might get down 3-0. They might scratch their way back and make it 3-2. And then the bullpen would kind of give up a backbreaking two runs after the Phillies had gotten close. And then it's like, oh, now it's 5-2 instead of 3-2, you know, and the Phillies might get a run back. It's 5-3. Well, now it's 6-3. Like, they just weren't able to keep a team in place. But that's what Taijuan Walker did. That's what Jordan Romano did in the game here on Monday night. So, I mean, anytime you get a contribution from Jordan Romano, especially because a number of the Phillies relievers were not available in this game, they pitched a back-to-back nights to finish up the series in Texas. So you had Jordan Romano getting an important inning here in this game. You had David Robertson making his first appearance with the Phillies to lock down the eighth inning. And by lockdown, I mean give up a hit and a walk, but managed to get out of it unscathed. Very David Robinson-y, that Robertson-y, you know, that's kind of like his...
Yes.
what he does, you know, and that's fine as long as he gets out of it with nothing allowed. And then Orion Kerkering, who has been dominant of late, really since Duran came on board, he seems to really have settled into the setup role, but he earned the save here on Monday night. So you're right. I think Taijuan Walker, the big story from this game here on Monday night. One of the benefits of recording on Monday night, sometimes we record on Sunday night, sometimes we record on Monday night, is when everybody records on Sunday night, everybody's talking about the weekend. And we're going to be the only people talking about Taijuan Walker on our roundtable edition of the podcast, because
it's what every fan has been waiting for.
It's the Taijuan episode 997 of Hittin' Season, the Taijuan Walker episode. Here it is, folks. You've been clamoring for it. I know the email box at the Hittin' Season at BillyPenn.com email address has just been crammed with requests for, why won't you talk about Taijuan Walker more? Well, here you go. A 3.39 ERA on the season after six innings of one run ball from Taijuan Walker. In 14 starts this year, his ERA is 3.31 in those 14 Ooh. Starts. The Phillies are 8-6 in his 14 starts. This time last year, he was in the midst of a streak of nine starts where he put up a 7.36 ERA, Liz. I don't know how to explain the Taijuan Walker turnaround, especially because they've shuttled him back and forth between the rotation and between and the bullpen. But he has really, in the absence of Aaron Nola and some of the struggles, the up and down nature of Luzardo and some of the other pitchers, he has just been a steadying, calming force and worth the money that they're paying for him, which I didn't think would be something that we were going to say this year.
No, I was just going to say that, like, he's finally sort of coming into that contract that they signed him to, and that he's going to pitch for the Phillies throughout. And seeing him sort of put it together right now, I know it's not the first time he's done that in his career. He's had a couple of other good seasons. I mean, let's see, 2022 with the Mets.
He did okay, right? 23, he was all right in 23.
He was all right in 23. And like, this is the best he's done in his career since his last year with the Mets, which is what the Phillies signed him on.
Right.
They signed him on his 3.49 ERA and all that fun stuff in his last year with the Mets. And now he's, you know, last year was really unpleasant. This year is turning out a lot better. And I wish I knew what it was. I don't even think he knows what it is.
Well, strikes, for one thing.
Strikes,
he's not wonking, guys. I think his stuff is better than it was a year ago. I remember in spring, they were talking about his velocity being a couple miles an hour higher than it was a year ago. So his velocity is not, he's not throwing anything by people. You know, in the game here on Monday night, he only had two strikeouts, but he's been efficient. He's avoiding the middle of the plate. He's avoiding getting barreled up, so he's not giving up home runs. And he's not putting guys on base. One walk in six innings in the game here on Monday night. If he's not putting people on and he's just kind of getting a lot of weak contact, he's missing the center of the plate and not walking guys. And when you can do that and your stuff is a little bit better than it was a year ago, then it's going to play up. And he's had remarkably good command so far this season, especially when he's been in the starting rotation.
That's what you've got to do when you're a pitcher like Walker. Like, people think strikeouts are the holy grail, but they're not. Weak contact can get it done, especially if your velocity isn't as high as some other guys. But, you know, his velocity clearly needed to take a tick upward from what it had been in order for all of this to be effective. And it's like he's finally gotten his velocity where it needs to be. He understands the plate and the strike zone and where his pitches need to go. He's got a lot of control. It's great to see. It's really wonderful to see.
A year ago, his fastball velocity was averaged 91.5 miles an hour. This year, it's averaging 92.3 miles an hour. It was 92.8 in 2023, his first season in Philadelphia. He's actually, you know, not throwing it a ton because he doesn't really throw the four-seamer all that much. He throws a cutter for a lot of the time. The cutter is about the same. It's been right around the same velocity. The slider is a little bit harder. The slider is a full mile an hour faster than it was a year ago from him. And so that's been part of the difference, is his stuff has been a little bit better. But I also mentioned the walk rate for him. Last year, 9.7% walk rate. This year, down to 7.4%. So that's a big deal for him, is just getting that walk rate down, staying away from the middle of the plate, not getting hurt by the long ball. And so the Taiwan Walker podcast, that's what this is. Taiwan Walker appreciation podcast, just a tremendous job by him here on Monday night and really all season in 2025. He's probably earning a spot on the postseason roster in some form. You know, he's not going to start a postseason game, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if he manages to, I don't know exactly what the role would be, but I wonder if he's earning a spot somehow, somewhere, some way.
That would, you would think, like right now, the way he's pitching, you don't want to, you know, it doesn't feel like you want to sit him. Doesn't feel like you can, when someone's pitching that well, it's not even about reward, mm-hmm. you know, rewarding someone for a turnaround. It's about you need that pitching. You need that to be in your rotation or in your bullpen. They're going to need a long relief guy. They're absolutely going to need one. And yeah. Walker could do it. I mean, I don't know. I personally do not know his stats, you know, starting as opposed to middle relief, as opposed to sort of, you know, inning 7, 8, 9. I don't think they've given him a lot of chances seven, eight, nine, but I don't know what the difference is. But whatever it is, I would definitely pay attention to it because he's been good starting this year. You know, if they could get away with using him in long relief, if that's somewhere they think that he can excel, they'll definitely need someone to do that in the playoffs. There will be someone who cannot make a long start for whatever reason. Maybe they have to have a bullpen game, which is a terrifying thought. But if they do, a guy like Taiwan is perfect to be in there. He's the perfect guy to start.
Well, I'll tell you, as many starters as this team has, I mean, Aaron Nola may not get a start in like the divisional series, given everything they have. Or it'll be Ranger or Nola won't get a start in the divisional series. So they'll have they shouldn't need him to. They shouldn't need a bullpen game at any point in the playoffs.
God willing, I know you have to. I say it just because I'm always worried about it. Because I remember the Dodgers of all people doing it last year when they, you know, won the World Series. So right. I'm always just aware of
injuries. Yeah.
Yeah, trying to include all of the possibilities.
Right, sure thing. And as a reliever this year in 17 innings, Taiwan Walker has a 3.71 ERA. It's 3.48 as a starter coming into tonight.
The ERA that's lowered. Not bad.
It's a 3.31 ERA now as a starter. So, I mean, he's done very well. Done very well as a reliever in low leverage situations. Tremendous outing from Taiwan Walker on Monday night, keeping the game close until the Phillies' bats could figure it out. And in the eighth inning, they figured it out. Andrew Abbott was just mowing them down. It looked like he was on his way to a complete game shutout. But then you had Edmundo Sosa with two outs, starting a two-out rally in the eighth inning, gets a single. Weston Wilson hit a game-tying RBI single. This Phillies platoon in the outfield, which we've been scoffing and mocking over the course of the last week and a half since they got Harrison Bader, has been paying dividends. Rob Thompson, I guess, has his finger on the pulse because Weston Wilson here getting the start, hits a game-tying RBI single to tie it up at one. And then, of course, you had the big guys come up the top of the order. Trey Turner hits the go-ahead RBI single, and then Kyle Schwarber with an absolute rocket that just stayed inside the right field foul pole for his 42nd home run of the year to make it a 4-1 lead. And then after that, Orion Kerkering, it was David Robertson and Orion Kerkering taking things home. But, you know, the bottom of the lineup, Liz, they've been kind of doing it. They did it in the Texas series, the last two games of the Texas series, and they got things rolling with two outs here on Monday night. If this lineup, if the guys at the bottom of the order can participate the way they have been over these last couple of weeks, it makes this lineup so much more dangerous and so much deeper. You don't have automatic outs. I mean, just you don't need them to do a lot. You just, yes, get the singles, get the RBI singles, bunch some hits together every once in a while. You know, we saw with Max Kepler with the huge two-run double on Saturday, or was it Sunday? I forget which day it was, but Max Kepler on Saturday had the huge two-run double in the 3-2 comeback win against Texas. You know, Harrison Bader goes over the fence to snag a fly ball over the wall in center field. Like these, the bottom of the order, these outfield guys, they're getting the job done, and they did it again on Monday night.
They did. I couldn't watch the whole game, but I looked at the television at one point and saw like a streak of purple purple and gray heading up, you know, towards second base, and I looked, I'm like, who is wearing purple stuff? I'm like, it's Harrison Bader into second and beating the tack. It was great. I saw a bang bang play in like the eighth or ninth with Bryce Harper and Trey Turner. That looked really, really great. It's nice to see the defense has showed up. The defense has been has been so much better than it was at certain points earlier in the season where we were bemoaning how inconsistent they'd been. But they really showed up tonight. And once David Robertson came in, I noticed that they pointed it out in the broadcast that they changed some of their defensive positions to sort of suit him. And I was glad to see it. I mean, maybe it was just a late inning change, but, you know, it was good to see that they were making changes that seemed to make sense with the defense, with the pitcher, which is something I remember us having complaints about them not doing in years past.
So after the win on Monday night, Liz, the Phillies now with a 6-game lead over the idle Mets. The Mets are obviously in free fall. We could talk about the Mets a little bit, too. They've seen their playoff odds fall from 95.8% to 79.1% over the last 2 weeks. Ooh. They are 19-26 since June 19th. They've lost 7 in a row and 9 out of 10. They have a 1.5-game lead for the final wild card spot over the Reds. That grew to 2 games with the Phillies beating the Reds here tonight. I guess now's a good time to talk about. I want to talk about the Phillies more than the Mets. We'll get to the Mets in just a second, but okay. Let's talk about this weekend series in Texas as well. The Phillies complete the sweep of the Rangers in Texas. They have 6 sweeps on the season. I know you guys talked about it on the Friday podcast. I talked about it on the midweek podcast. The Phillies seemingly having trouble sweeping teams when they have the opportunity this year. But at Phil Central noted on X, the Phillies have completed 6 sweeps. The Tigers have completed 6 sweeps. The Dodgers have 7 sweeps. The Brewers have 6. Padres 5. Mets 6. Astros 5. Right where baseball is. Right where the best teams in baseball are in terms of sweeping teams. It just kind of shows you it's difficult. I will note that this was the 15th time the Phillies have won the first 2 games of a series with a chance to sweep. And it's the 6th time they managed to finish it off. Now, I don't know how many of those other teams won the first 2 games of a series with a chance to sweep and couldn't do it. That stat doesn't get into that granularity of it. So I don't know that it's as many as 15 times. You know, I think the Phillies are unique in that pattern. Win-win, loss, win-win, loss. You know, but it was great to see them finish off the sweep place, Liz, where they have played horribly. Nightmare series over the last few years at Globe Life Stadium in Texas.
Yeah, it's bad. It's a bad place. I've been there. I've talked about it. It's a bad place to watch. Can't imagine it's a great place to play. It was nice to see the Phillies really turn the screws, especially in that first game when they just clobbered them in the later innings. I think that was a late innings clobbering. Just to see them pouring it on and just not letting up. That's been the characteristic of these Phillies lately. And I think we all have a bit of recency bias because we've seen the Phillies not just win the first 2 and lose the 3rd, but not win 3 games in a row for quite a while.
It was a while.
It had been a pretty big chunk. And that's the type of thing where, like, they've never swept, you know, it's terrible. And they finally do it and they win a 4th game in a row. You know, sometimes it's just about the air. Or how you're feeling, you know, that they're coming out of a great series in Texas where they have sucked. They have sucked in Texas and they come out with 3 straight wins over a team that can beat you. You know, it's not like they're a terrible, awful team. They can beat you and they go right into Cincinnati and do the same thing. They are right now. No opponent's lead is safe right now.
Yeah. And that's a great place to be. And I think I like the way the Phillies are doing. It's a nice combination of grinding some runs out and then hitting the long ball to supplement it. That's what we saw in that Friday game against the Rangers. And you're right. They got 5 in the 9th to make it a 9-1 win. But it was 4-1 for most of that game. Another phenomenal start by Christopher Sanchez in that one. Really, it's just continued with his tremendous play. On Saturday, the Phillies managed to come back late against Jacob deGrom, who was owning them. And of course, we all have memories of that, of opening day 2 years ago, 2023. The Phillies build that early 5-0 lead on deGrom, and then Aaron Nola gives it all back, and they lose. They lose in one of the worst games I've ever watched on opening day against the Texas Rangers in Texas. But they get a little measure of revenge against deGrom late in that game. thanks to Max Kepler with that two-run double down the right field line. A shocking turn of events. I did not see that. Liz, you could have knocked me over with a feather when Max Kepler hit that ball down the right field line.
I saw that. I'm just like, well, if he's listening to Hitting Season, he is dead set on making me and Justin look real stupid. Because we talked about him, you too. We talked about him on Friday quite a bit, and how we're pretty much done with him. We're ready for him to be done with the Phillies, for the Phillies to be done with him. But he showed us why they're keeping him around. I mean, you said it at the top of the show. Rob Thompson's got the magic. He's been figuring out when to play certain guys and what's going to be good for them, and he hasn't been hesitating to make substitutions late in the game when a better bat or a better glove might matter. Like, I think this is probably, I mean, despite 2022, which we all credit and was incredible, this I think is probably one of his best seasons as a manager as far as everything he's been doing. I know we all have arguments and quibbles with some of the things he's done, especially his bullpen management at times, but I think having a closer who's going to be a closer and a guy like Ryan Kirkering, who's the setup guy, yeah, essentially, having that, I think, is enabling him to sort of mix and match better in the early innings, because he's like, all right, well, these guys we're not putting here if the score stays here. So, you know, yeah, we're going to look at the rest of the guys that we've got. And, tonight it was Jordan Romano, who looked really impressive.
He looked better, yeah. And maybe if Romano is not in some super high leverage situations, they can get his confidence back to a point where he can be a middle reliever in the playoffs if you need him. I don't think they're going to give him the eighth inning of a big game, but maybe, you know, that's what they signed him for, and you never know. But I mean, they signed David Robertson to avoid that scenario,
yes,
in particular. But
I said on Friday that they need to get him in situations like they did tonight, you know, to, yeah, get his confidence back up, just places where he can pitch and he can give up a run or a hit and it's not the end of the world. Tonight he didn't allow a hit or a run, and he can go back into the dugout and have his evening and feel like he was successful, because he was.
Yeah,
that's got to, yeah, be good for him.
Definitely a contributor on Monday night, no doubt about it. So, Liz, what was the more impressive sweep the Phillies had this season? They've had six. They swept the Rockies at home very early in the season. That's not impressive. They also swept the Rockies on the road. Oh, no, sorry. The road sweep was the second series of the season. The home sweep was in May, and it was a four-game series. They swept the Rays in Tampa in early May. They swept the Pirates at home. In fact, the Pirates and Rockies sweeps came back-to-back during a phenomenal homestand. But I really think the competition is between two American League teams. When they swept the Blue Jays, who were red hot when they came into Philadelphia from June 13th through the 15th, and the Phillies ended up outscoring them by 16 runs in that three-game series in the sweep. Was that the more impressive sweep, or was going into Texas, like we've said, their house of horrors, a place where they have played abysmally over the years against a quality opponent, going in there and sweeping the Texas Rangers in three games, with two of those games being really close, a comeback win on Saturday, a really close kind of pitcher's duel, every pitch mattered on Sunday. Which to you is the more impressive sweep, the one against the Blue Jays at home or the one against the Rangers in Texas?
That's a really tough one, because you're, yeah, looking at sort of like a historical context for the Texas series and at a, this is what's happening right now in, right, the game for Toronto. I mean, I think at the end I'm going to choose Toronto, because they were red hot and the Phillies stopped them cold. Not just cold, they beat them into the ground with a giant ice hammer. No one expected that. I don't think we expected that at the time. No. We just wanted them to get out without, you know, not being embarrassed, but wanted to get out without looking too bad, because the Phillies, I don't think, were on quite the roll then as they are now. Things, yeah, were, I think, a lot more touch and go. And, you know,
yeah,
now
in June, they only finished one, yeah, game. Yeah, I was going to say, in June, they only finished one game over 500. So to your point, they weren't rolling, you know, quite like they were going into Texas.
Exactly. So I think that's definitely the Toronto sweep is probably the more important sweep, the better sweep. But historically, if you look at the history of Phillies teams past, it's definitely the Texas series.
So I will plant a flag for this Texas series, and for some of the reasons that I mentioned just a moment ago, but it's always harder to sweep a team on the road than it is at home. So that level of difficulty is certainly there. I think the Blue Jays were a better opponent than the Rangers. I think the Blue Jays are a better team than the Rangers are. But again, that's been a place where the Phillies historically have performed abominably. I think getting that 9-1 win out of the way on Friday helped them all to just say, like, okay, we can win here, right? But then you're down to, against Jacob deGrom late in that game on Saturday, and to find a way up and to get a contribution like that from Max Kepler at the bottom of the order to win that game on national television was a whole lot of fun. And then on Sunday, just figuring it out. I mean, the top of the lineup wasn't doing much, so you had the bottom of the order guys just kind of getting it done. And, you know, you had that bullpen, which I want to get into next. I'm starting to wonder, like, is this the strength? Is this a strength of the team now? Not the strength, but is it a strength? Before Johan Duran came to Philadelphia, there is no doubt in anyone's mind that the bullpen was the weakest part of this team, and it is what this team needed to fix most of all. I still thought they should have gotten more than just one guy, but I think Duran has done a couple of things here. One, obviously, he's shortened any game in which you lead by a full inning, because it's certainly he's going to blow a lead at some point. I just can't fathom it based on what I've seen so far. He's that good. But everyone else kind of moves down a slot, and now everyone knows what their roles are. And we saw the October recipe on Sunday, Liz. Zach Wheeler only went 5 innings. We'll talk more about him in a minute. But then you had Tanner Banks come on for a scoreless 6th. You had Matt Strom for a scoreless 7th. Orion Kerkring for a scoreless 8th. And then you had obviously the Duran show in the 9th inning. Like, everybody, it felt like, was in a role and in a place in a time of the game that fit. It felt so much more like the 2008 Phillies when you had Scott Ayer and Chad Durbin in the middle innings. And then you had JC Romero and Ryan Madsen as your setup guys in the 7th and the 8th. And then you had Brad Lidge doing his thing in the 9th inning. It felt like that on Sunday, watching those guys, where they came in the game and what they were able to do. It felt like a perfect match. And with the energy that Duran seems to have brought to this team, to this fan base, and now the way the rest of the relievers are kind of responding, I don't know. I don't know if I'm ready to say it's a strength of the team yet, but it's very, very encouraging. Would you say that the Phillies bullpen is a strength of the team right now with Duran leading the way in the 9th?
I think Duran's addition definitely settled things down quite a bit. It did exactly what you said it did. It has allowed everyone to get into specific roles. Everyone is feeling more settled. Like, that's something that you don't necessarily know you're training for until he gets there. And Duran got here and showed immediately why the Phillies went out to get him, why they spent what they spent. And the added bonus is just what you said, that they are now, everyone feels like they know what their role is. And that has been an issue for the Phillies for years and years.
Yeah.
I mean, earlier this year, before they had Duran, last year when Alvarado was really shaky, you know, Alvarado was great the year before that. But even then, it was sort of like a toss-up sometimes who would close. And now it's sort of like, all right, Rob, you do not have to think about the 9th inning. Just think about everything up until then.
They tried to solve it last year with Carlos Estevez. I feel like they tried to make Estevez their 9th inning guy during the regular season. But he wasn't, and he was good. He was good during the regular season while he was here. But there's a difference in Johan Duran, what he gives you right now, and what Carlos Estevez gave you last year. And I think that's what the rest of the relievers are picking up on. Like, there is just a confidence. Like, you see it. Nobody's going to hit him. He's not giving up a lead in the 9th inning. That's not happening. You know?
I mean, Brad Lidge wasn't even that type of swagger and confidence guy. Like, this is the type, I mean, I love Brad Lidge, but he's your, you know, local neighborhood insurance salesman, you know, when he's walking onto the mound. Duran has got swagger. He's got confidence. Oh. It's visible. And that has to make everyone in the bullpen feel really good. That's infectious. Because they're like, you know what? You know, it's not like I'm that much worse than Duran. There's no reason I shouldn't be proud of my stuff and go out there and act like I'm going to mow him down. Because he does. Why can't I? We're in the same bullpen.
Yeah, totally. And since the trade deadline, the Phillies bullpen has been among the best in baseball. They have a 1.82 ERA, which is third in baseball. Their FIP of 3.15 ranks sixth. They are fifth in strikeout rate, 27.8%. They are first in walk rate, so just 4.4% walk rate. They are first in whip, 0.73. And in batting average allowed, they're allowing a 163 batting average, which is fourth best in baseball. Ryan Kirkering, coming into the game on Monday night, had a 2.25 ERA in the second half of the season since the All-Star break. Matt Strom, 3.12. Jordan Romano, 3.00. And Tanner Banks, 2.61. And of course, Duran has not been scored on here in the second half. And now you've got David Robertson joining the bullpen, Liz. Jose Alvarado is in AAA, getting ready to rejoin the team at some point. What was your level of confidence in the Phillies bullpen prior to Duran on a scale of 1 to 10, and what is it now? What's the difference?
It was probably a 6 or a 7. Like, I knew that there were guys who could close. Yeah, 6 or 7 then, earlier.
Oh, okay.
Before Duran, wow, it was like a... Oh, really? Because I felt like, I mean, I couldn't... If I go below 5, it feels like I'm saying most of the time I do not expect them to make a save. Like, if they've got the lead in the ninth, I don't expect them. And you're not wrong. You're shaking your head, and you're not wrong. But I'll say, like, maybe a 5 or a 6. It was a toss-up, really.
Okay.
I wanted to have more confidence in them. Because that's all in the past. That Liz is gone. I don't know who she was or what she was thinking. Because with Duran here, it's definitely like a 7 and 8. I feel like saying a 9 is tempting fate, so I'm not. Yeah. But you can all understand that that's what I feel and think. So I'll say an 8, because like, it's been night and day. In our show notes, you put the ERAs, the second half ERAs of some of the other bullpen guys, and they are really great. Like, it's stuff that I didn't expect. And Duran's only been here a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it feels like 11 days he's been here. This is August 11th. So just 11 days and the difference that he's made. He's only been in three games, right? Three games for Joan Duran for the Phillies so far. But just tremendous effort. And he wasn't available on Monday night after pitching twice in three games in Texas. But actually, I think he's been in four games with the Phillies now. I don't remember. It doesn't matter. I should remember every Joan Duran experience. Three games, I think, is what it was for sure. All right. Let's talk a little Zach Wheeler, Liz. I mean, we've been talking a lot of great stuff with this team at the moment. Zach Wheeler pitched around reduced velocity on Sunday. Everything's down about 1.5 to 2 miles an hour. The fastball's down, the slider's down, the sweeper's down. Only went 5 innings on Sunday afternoon. Gave up just 2 runs, kind of danced between the raindrops for most of his start. Struck out 7, but walked 3. And fastball command was not where it needs to be for him. Generally speaking, when Zach Wheeler's on, he's throwing 96, 97 miles an hour and putting the fastball wherever he wants in the strike zone. That's just not happening right now for him. He's clearly struggling to figure it out. Now, struggling for Zach Wheeler means 2 runs in 5 innings. That's pretty good. He's your ace. He knows how to pitch. He's not just a thrower, so he can figure it out if he's got some issues. His start was pushed back a couple of days because he felt some shoulder discomfort. That's always a worry. It's always a concern. He told reporters after the game on Sunday that he's been feeling this shoulder discomfort for some time now, but it hasn't been that big a deal. Again, dude, just how did this, like, if you've
it's
been feeling
ending.
It for a while, say something sooner. And he said it hasn't been the same since
his pitching well. Maybe he felt like he shouldn't.
Yeah, I'm right. You know, I guess. But so he didn't look like his normal self. He managed to get through the game. The Phillies won the game. So all in all, at the end of the day, everything was fine. And everybody was looking to see how he would feel on Monday after the game on Sunday, how he would feel, how the shoulder would feel. And he says physically, there's no pain now. He feels better. He feels fine. He's just got to get the velocity up. It's not a big deal. He's downplaying it. the fan base is, generally speaking, I think, not downplaying it, but also that we're not, nobody's going overboard just yet, which I think is, it's very reserved of us. I do see some corners of the internet. They're saying, well, they really should just shut them down for 2 weeks and get them right. Well, if that's not what's needed, then shut them down. Like, this is the problem we got into last year when the Phillies had a big lead and they just like, you have an itchy, you have an ouchie, shut them down. Let's get them ready for the playoffs. Like, you can't approach it like that. And I think the Phillies are careful about that. That being said, when Zach Wheeler's not himself, there's some cause for concern. So I think we asked this last week on the podcast, where a week later, we've seen him pitch again. What is your level of concern right now with regard to Zach Wheeler?
It's a little reduced. Seeing him go out and not give up 4 runs in 5 innings was good. Seeing him throw like 83 pitches in 5 innings was not as great.
Mm-hmm.
I am hoping that he can figure it out, because when velocity is down, that usually, you know, there's a bigger problem. The one thing I was guessing is like, is it dead arm? I have no idea if shoulder soreness contributes to that, but you'd think they would say it's dead arm if it was. But it also feels like these Phillies are the Phillies that didn't say anything ever about injury to the public. Only instead of kind of being neener about it, like Joe Girardi was, like telling everyone his strategy not to tell anyone anything. It feels like now they're just not saying anything ever. And so I wish I knew what was wrong with him, because there's clearly still something there. His shoulder is fine, which is good, but there's clearly something else happening. His start was pushed back, and that alone would not affect his velocity that much. So I'm worried, but not overly so. Not to the point of yelling on the internet.
Right.
I'll just yell on here, the podcast that I have with you and Justin.
It's important. There's like stages of worry when it comes to players. We have not yet reached yelling on the internet stage of worry. You know, we're slightly below that. Like,
yes.
We're not at that DEFCON just yet, which is I think good. I really believe if the Phillies really thought something was up with Zach Wheeler, they would put him on the injured list. And there are, you know what? And there would be some wisdom to that. If they just wanted to say, hey, listen, let's shut you down for 10 days, put you on the 10-day injured list, especially once Aaron Nola comes back. It's probably going to be one more rehab start for Aaron Nola, and then he's back on the team probably by this weekend. I don't know if that means he's going to pitch this weekend or what it is, but if they decided to do that and decided to just let Zach sit for a couple weeks for 10 days and then come back, they could do that. I wouldn't have a problem with that. I could understand that. Better safe than sorry. I just don't know that that's going to fix whatever this issue is. I have a feeling that if they felt that was going to fix the issue, then they would do that.
Yeah. I trust the Phillies to do what needs to be done, especially after last year's, what you mentioned, you know, near the end of the season where everyone was getting a break. They eased off the gas a little bit because they wanted everyone to be healthy, and they just sort of went too far the other, you know, they went too far one way, they go too far the other way. This year, they're really trying to play it middle of the road, and I trust them to sort of do what needs to be done with Wheeler. I think maybe the difficult part is that they don't even know what to do. Like, what do you do? Pitchers are a mystery. Physical, you know, actual arm appendages are wild and weird. And I mean, that's why they're like two doctors of the country that handle them for athletes. You know, they are they are special. So who knows what's happening? I trust the Phillies, and my guess is that the Phillies trust Zach Wheeler, to be honest with them, whether or not they tell us what's going on, but to be honest with them and to get himself together, because if they see worse play or a bigger velocity drop, I think that's when they start saying, like, all right, Zach, we got to do something about this, because clearly continuing to pitch through it's not working.
Well, and you remember, in late in the playoffs in 2022, going into game, I think it was game one of the World Series. I think he pitched game one of the World Series. He was not himself. He had started. He'd lost some velocity. Remember, there was a lot of concern after that game one where he got hit around a little bit. that he was pitching with reduced velocity, and they ended up like pushing him back, and that's why he started Game 6 of the World Series instead of Game 5, was because with a rainout, yeah, they had an extra day. They wanted to give him a couple extra days to see if that velocity would come back, and in Game 6 it did. He did find it again, but this has happened before. Now, that was further into the season than this one, but you know, he's also a little bit older now. He has a lot of innings under his belt. I will say that I think he needs to get this velocity back in order to be the kind of guy in the playoffs that he has been. You know, if you're going to start game one of a playoff series against another team's ace, you need Zach Wheeler being vintage Zach Wheeler. What we saw on Sunday is perfectly understandable and well and good for an August 10th game against the Rangers on a Sunday where you're trying for a sweep. You know, that's one thing. But they really need to make sure that whatever they need to do to get him right for October, pitching 96, 97 miles an hour, fastball command is there. They need that Zach Wheeler. That's where the Phillies' real advantage is as a team, is having Wheeler and Christopher Sanchez, especially starting games 1 and 2 and 5 and 6 of a playoff series. Like, having those four guys elite in an October series, that's where the Phillies have their true advantage. They need whatever they need to do to make Wheeler that guy. Hopefully that's not gone away. That's what they need to do.
Agree. Strong agree. Oh, I can't imagine a playoff with a questionable Zach Wheeler. Good Lord.
Let's not imagine it. Let's forget it. Let's pretend it'll never happen, ever in our lives. All right, kind of looking ahead for the rest of the month, looking at the August schedule here, Liz. The Phillies, it's kind of an easier schedule for the rest of the month. There's a couple of tough series in here, but also some cupcakes. The Phillies are playing the Reds. They won the first game. The Reds have a 5.17 winning percentage coming into the series. That dipped a little bit, obviously, with the loss against the Phillies on Monday. But then they finish off the road trip, the Phillies do, with 4 in the nation's capital this weekend against the Nationals, with a 3.95 winning percentage. Again, no reason not to win 3 out of 4 against the Nationals in D.C. Then they come back home for a 6-game homestand against the Mariners, who are playing great baseball right now. They have a 5.43 winning percentage, really a good team. Should be a lot of fun, that series. Cal Raleigh coming to Citizens Bank Park. Cal Raleigh and Kyle Schwarber going at it. That'll be a lot of fun. But then they get the Nationals for 3 games at Citizens Bank Park. So 7 games against the Nationals here over the next week or so. Then the big series left in August, 3 at the Mets, who are sliding down the standings dramatically, and then they finish up with 4 games at home against the Braves, so have a 4.21 winning percentage. But that's 20 games, Liz. 3 at the Reds. They got 7 against the Nationals, 3 with the Mariners, 3 with the Mets, 4 with the Braves. 20 games against those teams. I'm predicting the Phillies during that stretch will go 14-6. That's a really good stretch of baseball. Maybe that's shooting it a little high. What do you think their record's going to be after that slog? Because it gets harder after that. They get Mets, Braves, Brewers, Marlins, Mets, Royals, Dodgers after that. It is a slog after that.
Oh, God. That's unpleasant. My first thought was 15-5, and maybe that's shooting a little high. But I think they could do it. They've had some silly losses to the Nationals in the past, but this doesn't seem like a team that would give those up. 4 at the Nationals and then 3 against the Nationals at home. Those feel like steals, you know?
Yeah.
I have no idea how the Mariners, I mean, they're definitely better than they've been in the past, but I don't know. I could see the Phillies doing some damage against them. There's no reason they shouldn't win the other 2 games against the Reds, because I don't think they have as many good pitchers on their roster as they showed tonight. And the Braves all the way down there. Listen, no matter how bad the Braves are doing, I'm never going to discount that the Phillies can cough it up to the Braves, because it's history. Yeah. It feels like it's history to do that, especially at a point where they'd been doing well, and like a screw turns and the door hinges and things are then going the other way.
Yeah.
I just hope they don't get swept by the Mets. That's what I hope. They can lose 1 or 2 to the Braves and I'll be fine. They cannot get swept by the Mets. I really do not want that to happen.
Even as the Phillies appear to be pulling away from the Mets, that will still be a good litmus test for them, because that has also been a house of horrors for them over the course of the last 12 months. So that'll be a big series. That might be the Mets season right there. at least their chance of winning the division. We'll see where things stand, obviously, in a couple of weeks when that series rolls around at the end of the month. But yeah, it should be interesting as the Phillies finish up. And I'm going to have my son Ethan's going to join me for a national scouting report on the midweek episode of the podcast to give us a little bit.
Yes,
we've been watching a lot of Nationals here in the Stolness house, and it is. They're a rough watch, you know, guys. They could win all seven, and it wouldn't surprise me at all. Like, the Phillies may jump up to number one in run differential in the National League after this seven-game swing. The Nationals are that bad. Listen, it's really bad.
Your son is getting the same education at his age that you got at your age watching the Phillies.
Well, and he has the benefit of the 2019 World Series under his belt. I mean, he's already got it better than me. That's what I tried to tell him the other day, because he was really upset and despondent about it, you know. And I was like, buddy, you've already seen a World Series. You got to I didn't get to experience that until I was old and grown, you know.
Exactly. So
he's okay. There's some rough days. There's some rough days. He'll tell us about it in the midweek episode of the podcast. So everybody can look
Can't
forward
wait.
To that. All right, let's finish off the podcast, Liz, by laughing at the New York Metropolitans.
Yes, let's.
I mentioned their playoff odds have fallen from 95.8% to 79.1%. They're still very likely to make the postseason.
Oh, yeah.
Their odds of winning the division are fading so quickly. It's just amazing how one team can surge, another team can fall, and that quickly you can lose a division in the span of really a week is what's happened here. The Mets have lost 7 in a row, 9 of 10. But, Liz, it's the way they lost games over the course of this last week. Let me give you five things here that happened.
It's beautiful.
Against the Guardians, and we were on the air while this was happening, I think, on the last roundtable, in an extra inning game against the Guardians. The Mets fought back. They tied the game. They had a chance to win it in the ninth, but there was a big Pete Alonso strikeout that blew a rally. And then in the 10th inning, Brett Beatty threw away a double play ball into the outfield that allowed the Guardians to score two runs, so the Mets lose that game. They almost got no hit by a no-name Guardians pitcher to finish off a Guardians sweep of the Mets. It was a Juan Soto home run that saved their bacon with two outs in the ninth, with one out in the ninth. So they almost get no hit. Then this Brewer series. I realize Milwaukee's playing really good baseball. I'm still not sold on the best team in the National League, but they're really hot right now. Starling Marte thrown out at home as the tying run in the ninth inning of a 3-2 loss on a soft single to center. And I'll give Marte credit. He was off at the crack of the bat. I mean, it's not like he got a late jump. He it looked like he was running hard. And that dude in center field threw a seed to home plate, and they nailed him by an eyelash at home. So you lose on that play. Ryan Helsley, the guy they pick up at the trade deadline, who almost could have come to Philadelphia, it looks like he gets the final out of the eighth inning with the Mets trailing 5-4 on a flyout. But as it turns out, there was a pitch timer violation. He took too long to throw the pitch. And so instead of the hitter hitting a fly ball and recording it out, it's a ball. So William Contreras on the next pitch hits a 3-run home run to turn a 5-4 deficit into an 8-4 deficit.
Ugh.
And then on Sunday, the Mets get a 5-0 lead against Milwaukee, only to blow that 5-0 lead and lose it as closer Edwin Diaz gives up a walk-off home run to a 28-year-old rookie. So, Liz, your Metropolitans, are they cooked in the National League East? Is it over in the National League East for the division? Do the Phillies, is it locked down?
That is a lot of Metsing. That is the type of Metsing we haven't seen for like a year. This was the point last year where they turned the faucet on and they were gone with, you know, in a blur of purple grimace.
Yep.
Which, God, did I hate that.
Yeah, that was the worst thing ever.
It was really terrible. I would like to say that they have it locked down, but we've seen the swing. And things could change quickly. It'll depend a lot on where the Phillies are at the end of August. And since they've got a pretty easy August schedule, as we said, if they take advantage of that, they're going to be in a great position. The Mets will not continue to lose every game forever, though. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
If they just have to, put a stop to the Metsing. And I don't know if the baseball gods are ready to do that yet. Because, man, that Ryan Helsley pitch timer violation was hilarious. It was a laugh a second watching. I actually watched that happen. I think my husband and I were watching the big inning, which is on like Apple TV and MLB Network, which is actually one of the only good things that's ever on MLB Network. The big inning is really fun. It's sort of like Red Zone. It's like Red Zone for baseball, where they're like, what's happening now? And they've got four games on the screen. It's really great. But watching that, I'm like, I can't believe the guy that they just acquired got a pitch time violation, which is not common anymore. You don't see it all the time. And then the very next pitch, you couldn't script it better. You couldn't script, like, that's in a movie.
Yeah.
That's a movie thing.
There was one young Mets fan in attendance in Milwaukee, and it's been on social media. I'm sure folks have probably seen it, where you just saw a young heart getting ripped to shreds, you know, while this is happening. And some lady, I'm guessing his mom or an older sister or something, reaches over and hugs him. And he's not crying, but he's just looking like just crushed. And we've all been there, you know.
You gotta learn, kid.
It's part of the, listen, I felt bad immediately. I was like, oh man, that's awful. But then I realized, you know what? He's going to get stronger for this. It's going to callous him to the rigors of being a baseball fan, especially a Mets fan, but even as Phillies fans, right? We got calloused over the years. You know, for the older generations, you had 64, you had Black Friday, you had all those misses in the late 70s before finally breaking through. For those of my generation, you had Joe Carter, you know, and you know, you had 2009, and you know, you had all these different these Brian Wilson striking out Ryan Howard, the Ryan Howard Achilles pain, 20, like we've all had
still viscerally painful.
We've all been calloused by the pain, you know. We've had the dark times and we've had the bright. It makes the bright times brighter. So to that young Mets fan who is, I'm sure, listening to this podcast, and if somebody can put the podcast in front of this young man, even though I'm a Phillies fan and I loathe all things Mets, loathe them all. I don't loathe you, and I want you to know. I want to build you up in this moment. I want to help you to become a truly self-actualized Mets/baseball fan, and just for you to know and encourage you, this will make you stronger. Probably not this year, though. Looks pretty bad. Just putting it out there for you. But there. This will. You'll build on this. You'll get over this, and it'll be all better someday. I'm thinking 2055 is probably by the next time the Mets win a World Series. It's a nice round number. I feel pretty good about that. But anyway, I just wanted to offer that little bit of encouragement to a young man in Milwaukee who I'm sure is listening to this podcast. I don't know if you have any other words of encouragement.
We're mentioning him not by name.
I don't know his name. He's just he is sad young man on the internet. That's his name to me. Sad young man on the internet.
Sad young man on the internet. Yeah, like many Mets fans have been over time.
It's his X handle, probably. All right, Liz, let's finish up this podcast with some final thoughts. You have any final thoughts to wrap the show up here?
Not really. I will say that my little niece, who is like 9-10 months old now, is adorable. I have not managed to get her into any Phillies gear yet, but she was obsessed with my father's Phillies hat when he visited her this weekend, was just grabbing at it and could not stop. I don't believe she's done this with any other hat he wears, though he actually doesn't wear any hats but Phillies hats. So I'm just going to assume that means she's going to be a Phillies fan if I have anything to say about it. Her father, my brother-in-law, is a Mariners fan, though not quite very intense, and my sister could not care less. So I'm hoping that I can be positive Phillies influence on this child. Make sure she wears other sports, you know, items as a young child. She's worn a gritty onesie, which is maybe the cutest thing I've ever seen. So I've got to get her some Fanatic stuff.
Yeah, I got a guy right back there. That's been just he helps complete. I think
I'll get her a little stuffed Fanatic.
Anything Fanatic works. Yeah, that's the perfect thing. She can't have mine. That's mine.
Yep, that's yours.
Get her own, and I'm sure she'll love it. That's mine. That's mine. It's nobody else's. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. And I want to encourage you all to make sure to check out the WHYY YouTube page. This episode of the podcast, the roundtable episode, as well as all of the roundtable episodes that we do, will live on the WHYY YouTube page. So go subscribe to the WHYY YouTube channel. You'll get Hittin' Season, but you'll also get a lot of the other great stuff that WHYY is doing as well, and you'll see it all right there. The rest of our podcasts, the midweek and the end of week podcast, you can still find those on our Hittin' Season YouTube page. So subscribe to both. It's two totally different channels. You can do it. It's not illegal. The internet lets you do that sort of thing. So it's very, very cool. And if you choose to listen to us in audio form only, well, that's perfectly normal because we're a podcast and that's how this whole thing started 10 years ago. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts, there we are. Tell your friends and family members about the Hittin' Season podcast. This team is winning the World Series. I haven't said that in a while. Feeling pretty good about things right now. So I'm going to bring back that old chestnut.
Yes.
Get him in on the floor right now. Get him listening to Hittin' Season. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.